Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Claws Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and tonight we have a great show for you tonight. We've got the fabulous Donna Loren and the new lead singer for the Four Tops, Alexander Morris, coming up at 8:30. So before we start, let's just say thank you to our sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, The Observer Newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey, Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey, where oral satisfaction is guaranteed, and our new member to the family, GenieBottles.com. Artist Mario Della Casa, he makes these beautiful I Dream of Genie bottles, and they're gorgeous, and he was kind enough to give one away to one of our callers the other day when we had Barbara Eden on, and the winner is ecstatic. So congratulations again to Stephen and Marilyn. So I believe I have Donna on the phone. Donna Loren, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. Well, dealing with this incredible time we're living in.
Oh God, it's just too crazy. It's just, what's going to happen next? It's like every day it's something else. I'm over it. I don't know about you.
Well, hi,
I'm
Joanne.
Totally over it.
I mean, I'm sure nothing renders you speechless.
No, not these days. That's for sure. That's for sure. And you know what? I said to myself, too, I said, you know what? If you can make it through this, you can make it through anything, because God knows what people are going through that are not working and are struggling to pay rent, mortgages, food, their kids. I mean, if you're working, God bless you. Appreciate every minute of it, because there's people out there really struggling. And if they make it through this, they can make it through anything. And us, too, stuck in the house, not being able to go out. And as performers, not being able to go out and perform something that we love to do. And when we don't do it, we don't know what to do with ourselves. Am I right?
Well,
Donna?
You know, I kind of look at this, you know, from the mountaintop, and everything that's going on for the first time in my life is actually unifying all life on Earth. It's actually creating this common denominator that, you know, no one is exempt from, from the virus, or from economics, from, socialization, from, all kinds, climate change, is actually, I truly believe that we're entering into, what I'm calling is a spiritual age. Said God only knows, and I truly believe that. Yes, that's true.
I do too. But you're right. Everyone is dealing with it in some way or another. No one is untouched or unfazed, and it's horrible. But on a lighter note, let's get happy. I am so happy to have you on. My God, I was a huge
Thank
fan
you.
Of Shindig. Shindang was ahead of my it was ahead of my time, but I actually used to buy VHS tapes of it and watch it, because I loved it so much. And I just, you look absolutely fabulous, by the way.
Well, you know, I just, you know, I started a podcast called Love's a Secret Weapon, a song that I sang in Pajama Party. And it's just kind of getting rolling. And I have a chapter that I'm reading from my autobiography on Shindig. And I just happened to interview Jack Good, who was the producer, his assistant, who was a young man at the time. He was the same age as me. I think he was maybe a year older. His name is David Mallett. And he just told me, I asked him, you know, what was a highlight on Shindig for you? And what he said, hold on, you know, sit down, because this is what it was all about in 1964, 65, 66. Is the networks were very egregious about mixing company on the same stage.
Right.
And when he said, okay, we've got the Blossoms, we've got three black chicks, and you know, and we're going to bring on Sam Cooke, and then we're going to bring on Marvin Gaye and Tina Turner and Jackie Wilson and James Brown and Ray Charles, and they're all going to sing live.
Wow.
And he said, you know, Jack Good, who passed away a couple of years ago, and actually made a gorgeous comment for my book, which I have to tell you, I'm so proud of. It's called Pop 60s. And he was friends with Robert Kennedy, who was Attorney General at the time.
Really?
And he said, well, when he was making the deal, it was in 1963. And so he said to the network that, you know, hey, if you have a problem with this, put it down in writing and I'll send it to my friend, you know, Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
And they never put it down in writing. So Shindig went on the air and became number one immediately.
Wow. Did you think that doing a Dr. Pepper commercial would get you to where you are today, or what you experienced throughout your life? I mean, you had a crazy ride in the 60s. You were doing everything and anything, and you were great at every little thing.
Oh,
the singing, the acting, everything.
Thank you, honey.
What was it like to work with Annette and Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon?
Well, you know, I met Annette when I did the Mickey Mouse Club, and I was 10 years old on my 10th birthday. And
Did you do a talent show for them? Is that how you got noticed?
Yes, I did the talent roundup.
Right.
I did the talent roundup and became an honorary Mouseketeer.
Wow.
And Annette was a good head or more taller than me. So, you know, she was definitely somebody I could look up to. Little did I know that, you know, a few years later, I was 16 when I started doing the Beach Party movies. And she was a full-grown woman about to be engaged and getting ready to get married. And it was a wonderful reunion. You know, she was the real deal.
Is that true? You were the only actual teenager on the show?
The first movie that I did was called Muscle Beach Party, and little Stevie Wonder, who was either 12 or 13 at the time, he was the youngest one. But then, yes, I was pretty much the youngest one that was in a series of five of them, yes.
Right, but they were basically all adults playing teenagers, and
Isn't that true? Isn't that true?
Well, that's like that now too. It's always been that way, I guess. Now you also were in the Monkees. I got to ask you, what role you played in the Monkees?
That was Princess Colette, and I was supposed to be married to Davy. And
that's when they were in England, or no? You played a British girl.
I played a Persian princess. It was called Everywhere a Sheik Sheik.
Right, and your father and someone else was trying to kidnap somebody or do something to you,
Davey.
Wasn't it?
Kidnapped
Davey. I remember that episode. I'm sorry I don't remember it verbatim, obviously, but I do remember that episode. How cool is that? I remember that.
And those guys were so amazing. You know, I ended up going to a Monkees reunion a few years ago, after 1 year after Davey passed away. And everyone assembled, Peter and Mickey and Mike. And we were in New Jersey at a convention just for Davey and the Monkees. And because I was on, they invited me. So, you know, we were all singing I'm a Believer, which is one of my very favorite all-time songs.
Well, you know, next month we've got Buffy coming on, Coco, and Valerie. I know you know those guys.
Well,
I know you know them.
It's been a while, for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited to have them on. We may call next month Monkey Month. I got all these monkeys coming on, you know. It's crazy.
Monkey around.
Exactly. Now, I wanted to ask you, your singing career, I mean, it was huge. You released so many singles and 45s at the time, you know, the two-sided and both sides, you had big songs on them, which is great.
I was very fortunate. I you know, being on the West Coast, I had the A-list musicians, producers, especially when I was recording for a publishing company and making demonstration records for other people. You know, I was at Gold Star, where, you know, Phil Spector created the Wall of Sound, and then I was with Capitol and singing in the same microphone that Frank Sinatra was using in Studio A to make my Beach Blanket Bingo album. So, yes, I really did. And then, you know, may I just spring forward. I was living in Hawaii for quite a while, and I decided before I left in 2010, I wrote a bunch of songs and I made an album called Love It Away. And actually, that was 2010. And one of the title song, Love It Away, someone mentioned to me, hey, why don't you just update it and give it a dance remix? So actually, that's going to go on YouTube if your listeners are curious and feel like dancing at home, because we're home and we need to move around. So, you know, dance music.
What is it?
Yeah,
Love It Away? I'll share it later.
Love It Away on... Thank you. Thank you. I have to make sure, you know, it just came in like momentarily. So I'm just bringing it up, and I don't know if it's, I think it's activated on YouTube. If it isn't today, it will be tomorrow. I promise.
Oh, great. Great. Well, I wanted to ask you, but did you now, you, like you said, you've done demos, you've sung your own songs. What songs have you written for other artists since you work for a publishing company? What huge songs have you written for others?
Yeah, I have never written songs for others. They're just strictly for myself. But when I was 14, I got signed to a publishing company. This was in 1961, and Glenn Campbell was one of the artists that was singing demonstration records. Johnny Rivers was another artist. And Jimmy Bowen, who became the producer for Garth Brooks, and just lots of people, Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty, and all, you know, that genre. He came into town and started producing me. He liked this Billy Page and Gene Page brothers that wrote a song for me, and Crest Publishing Company had a Crest record label, so. So I became an artist on Crest, as well as making demos for other people.
Right, right.
Fun. Now, when you worked with, I don't know if this is true, but were you married to Lenny Warnaker at Warner?
Well, yeah, Lenny and I got married in 1968, and we had three children. And my son Joey is a musician, and my daughter Anna is a composer and artist, and my daughter Katie is an interior designer, and they all have children, and so, yes, that started back then.
Nice. Well, because I was thinking if you were married to him at the time, your music career must have been really focused on with him. You know, did you have better promotion and everything with him, or?
Well, by then, Joanne, I chose to be a full-time mother.
Oh, you had left the industry, got it.
So, you know, at 21 when I married and then became pregnant, you know, I made the decision to raise my children. I wanted to be home, and I wanted them to know who their mother was. And, you
right.
know, I loved them very much. So that was right. my decision. But we always, you right. know, we always had music in the house, of course.
Right. Well, of course. Absolutely. I got to ask who when you did the Caravan of Stars, who was on that tour with you?
Oh, okay. Well, it was actually the very first tour that the Supremes were on. And,
oh, really?
And coincidentally, again, I interviewed Brian Hyland, who was one of the artists, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. And he's in one of my podcasts coming up soon. And,
right.
Yeah, and he reminded me that it was Brenda Holloway, who was a Motown artist that was climbing the charts at the time. And when Dick Clark wanted her to be on the tour, Motown, Berry Gordy said, "Hey, wait a minute, I've got this new group. They're called the Supremes." And so they started when nobody was listening to them. Nobody knew them at the beginning of a summer. By the end of the summer, Where Did Our Love Go and Baby Love were, you know, topping the charts. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we had the Shirelles, and we
right.
had, I'm drawing a blank. The singers that sang, He's a Rebel. I forgot the name.
Yeah, yeah. Name. He's a Rebel. Yep.
Part
of my voice.
Yes. And but Gene Pitney, you know, Town Without Pity. He was the star of the show.
Right.
And then, you know, and little old me. And then I was on a 21-day tour with them because I was always working for Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper sponsored that caravan.
Really?
And that's why I was brought on. Well, Dick Clark and I did lots of commercials and lots of events and whatever Dr. Pepper is associated with, he and I did. So for
right.
5 years until I retired.
Right. Nice. Oh, Dick Clark must have been wonderful to work with. I heard he has moments, but I don't know if that's true. But I heard he was very serious about what he did. Let's put it that way. And if things weren't going right, he acted like a boss. That's all. We'll leave it at that, right?
Well, I think he was very dedicated to the music.
Right. He cared
extremely
about
extremely dedicated. And
yeah.
You know, if your listeners are curious to tune into my podcast, Love the Secret Weapon, I do talk about, you know, times on the tour with him. You know, I give you a little bit inside scoop of how it was. So if
right.
you're curious, please tune in to some of the episodes and you'll hear more.
Yep, I'm definitely going to let people know about that, too. Don't worry about that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, it's so crazy. I don't write questions down. They're in my head, and I've got like five
cool.
of them here, and now I'm all mixed
cool.
up. So give me a
oh,
second
God.
To gather my thoughts. What I wanted to ask, oh, God. Oh, I have to ask you about your album you did for Elvis, Donna Does Elvis in Hawaii. Why and what
oh,
song
yes.
from?
Well, you know, I was very sad, you know, after living in Hawaii for 15 years. I was very sad to leave Hawaii. I was coming back to California. My youngest daughter was going to have a baby, and I wanted to be there for that. And then, you know, that was 10 years ago, and I decided to stay. But it was my homage to, you know, to the feeling that I experienced. And I know Elvis loved Hawaii as well, and he never really got to travel out of the United States to perform because of Colonel Parker.
Other than Hawaii, you're right. Well,
yeah.
Which is in the United States, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's so isolated in the middle of the Pacific that it feels like a different destination, and it was for him, and it is for everyone who visits Hawaii. You know, you just feel like you've landed in a utopia. So.
Well,
I've
never been. My sister's been. She says it's gorgeous. But when she went the first time, she came home, she goes, "It's definitely not like in an Elvis movie, but it's still nice."
It's not Technicolor. Well, you know what? You really have to be in love. Maybe not in love with someone, but in love, period. And you smell the plumeria and the gardenia and the tuberose, and you smell the romance in the air. And you know, when you go out for the evening and you see the delicious hula dancers performing everywhere, you know, and you're in that humid, warm night air, which, you know, at midnight you can take a walk down the streets of Honolulu and it's perfectly safe and, you know, and clean. So it's a very special place on the planet.
Paradise, right? Oh.
What songs are on
the album? Are they originals or are they Elvis remakes?
You know, I did Teddy Bear, and you know, I have to look at that. I'm not prepared. It was 10 years ago. gee whiz. Give me a minute here. I'm walking over to the cabinet.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. You'll give me a minute to catch up to what I want to ask you next.
Yeah. Here I go. I did Loving You, and I did One Night.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And I did Merry Christmas Baby, something that he did. Those are the songs I did. And, you know, I did have an opportunity to meet him, and I'll tell you that little story. When on my 18th birthday at Shindig, I was on the set, and I got a phone call, and they had this kind of black podium in the middle of the soundstage, and I was called over to answer the phone. And there was a driver who answered the phone and said, "Elvis is waiting for you."
What?
And I'm like, 18 years old and, you know, still probably the only virgin in Hollywood. And I freaked out, you know, and it was my 18th birthday here. You know, I'm on the set working. And he says, you know, "I'm parked outside and Elvis is waiting for you."
Wow.
And I thought to myself, first of all, my mother and father, one of them were always chaperoning me, and a Dr. Pepper representative was always probably 6 feet away from me, because I was representing the company. So I never had that leisure, you know, to just go and, you know, and explore. So I thought to myself, oh, God, I can't just leave the set. You know, first of all, my professional life was dictated by my family, by my parents. You know, it was their it was their living that I was working for. I was supporting my family of five, and so so I just I passed on it. You know, on my 18th birthday, he sent a limo for me.
You
and
passed
all think of,
on a phone call to go outside to Elvis's car. You could have been Priscilla. You could have been a contender.
All I could think of, Joanne, is, oh, my God, I'm probably the only virgin in Hollywood. I can't let this happen.
Oh, that's true, because God knows it may have. Right?
So,
oh, my God.
I love him. When he passed away, I said a prayer. I said, you know, would you just leave me one note? Just one note.
Well, I'm a big fan as well. Your real life situation that happened to you was one of my mother's dreams, that he would come to the house and say, come on, Joni, let's go. She used to dream it. One time she had a dream. He came riding up 3 flights of stairs in a tenement, 6 family tenement, on a motorcycle, pulled into the kitchen and said, let's go, Joni.
That is gorgeous, Joan. Gorgeous.
She said that he was our father. How crazy is that? Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh.
Well,
he
did have that presence. You know, he was a godlike figure. And he was so filled with love. And I have to attribute his mother, her devotion to him. And, you know, the love that he had. And then the spirit that he had, you know, that carried his voice. All of us.
Right. They say how a man treats his mom is how he's going to treat his wife. So that's
I do have another Elvis story. It's not about me, but okay. So my husband and I had a very, very, very close dear friend who passed away a few years ago. His name is P.F. Sloan. He was a songwriter who wrote Secret Agent Man. A bunch of huge songs, like, you know, anyway. So when he was 12 years old, he told me that his father bought him a guitar, and he went to Wallace Music City, and, you know, in Hollywood, and he went to get guitar strings so that he could tune the guitar. Mm-hmm. And so he walks up to Wallace Music City, and he sees all these girls hanging outside. And when he came to the door, there was a guard who said, well, he's a musician, let him in. So they let him in, and the whole place was empty, except for someone at the cash register. So he looked up. There was a two-story situation inside, and he sees Elvis walking down the stairs. And Elvis comes over to him, this 12-year-old guy, and puts his arms around him and says, let me show you a few chords to Love Me Tender.
Oh, my God. Could you
imagine
that?
That's a true story. That is a true story.
Wow. He was a great guy. Now, we could go on and on about Elvis, so... I want to talk about you. I do want to ask you, I'm a huge fan. I was also a huge fan of Bobby Sherman's. And I got to ask what it was like to work with him. Are you still friends with him? Or do you speak with him?
Bobby, he's a doll. He's a doll. You know, I did see him a few years ago. I was invited to one of his Christmas parties, which was spectacular. He invited me because he wanted to show his 200 guests. He and his wife, Bridget, were showing Shindig films, and he wanted my permission to show duets that he and I did. Top it off, he flew Bill Medley in to entertain the party. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So that was
but
a reunion. I know.
I thought he dropped out of the business. That's beautiful to hear. I think he's living normal Joe Mr. Paramedic life, and here he's having good old high-time parties in Hollywood.
Let me tell you, he was in a tuxedo at the Bel Air Hotel, okay? And 200 guests with a formal how many courses for dinner, sit-down dinner, and then entertainment by Bill Medley. And I was invited as a special guest. And may I tell you, at the beginning of the party, I don't want to take too long, but when you enter into the Bel Air Hotel, you walk over a bridge and there are swans swimming in a stream. Wow. And this is a very old hotel. It's probably built in the 20s. And it's beautifully, beautifully preserved. And you enter, and then you walk along a pathway, and it's kind of indoor-outdoor. And Bobby and his wife, Bridget, had a snow machine. So as soon as you entered their area, there was a snow machine and three carolers that looked like they were out of a Norman Rockwell painting.
And then
the doors to the party opened into the ballroom with six rockets that he flew out from New York.
Oh, for the Christmas Spectacular. Fabulous.
Doing high kicks. And
nice.
And then, of course, there was a Santa Claus. And they do have, he and his wife have a foundation for a music school in Africa. And forgive me,
no
I think
way.
It's Ghana, but I'm not. Yeah. So the evening, you know, they do this once a year. And basically, Bobby had always wanted to be in the paramedics. And so once he gave up his teen idol role, he started that. And the L.A. Police Department hired him to teach the police department ER. And when he was teaching, they put him through the academy, so he became a police officer. And he told me an adorable story. He said, just before he was getting ready to retire, he had to make an arrest. And it was a woman for a DUI. And as he's putting the handcuffs on her, she looks around and sees his badge, and she says, I used to watch you on TV.
Oh, God. You know, think about it, though, Donna. If his career was going on now, it would be a great reality show with Bobby Sherman, following Bobby Sherman as a paramedic and police officer. How cool would that have been? He must look fabulous,
huh? That was his dream.
He must look fabulous.
He hasn't changed at all. He's like Dick Clark. He was the perpetual teenager.
Oh, I'd love to see what he looks like now. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was my last question about your past, unless you wanted to go on more about it. But I really wanted to talk about your new talk show so we can let people know about it. And so it's called Love the Secret Weapon. And you're going to be doing audio book readings on it from Beach Bed Blanket Bingo?
The format is for about 5 years, I was writing my autobiography and collaborating with a doctor, PhD of psychology that was a friend of mine in Australia. And that manuscript has been put on a shelf, and I never tried to have it published. So when the pandemic started and I had some time on my hands, I started percolating the idea of reading the manuscript, which is my autobiography. And so what I do is I read chapter by chapter. I just completed chapter 5, which is going to be going up on Spotify, Apple, Google, Anchor, et cetera, tomorrow, actually. Chapter 5. And that is called These Are the Good Times, and it's just before I start on Shindig. So it's more about when I was signed to Dr. Pepper, what happened when I was introduced as the Dr. Pepper girl in Dallas the same day our beloved president was assassinated on the corner of the Dealey Plaza where I was performing.
Oh, my.
And I tell that story in a four-part.
This is tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes, it will be. My collaborator in Australia does the posting, and so it happens rather late in the day. So I would say for your listeners to either look for it in the evening or Friday to make sure that it's on Spotify and Apple and Google and all the rest. And this is a four-part episode because I was very fortunate enough to talk to a friend. Her name is Allison Martino, who is the daughter of Al Martino, and you know, we used to be on Capitol Records together. And Allison has a wonderful, wonderful Facebook page called Vintage LA, and for anyone who's a fan of the '60s and old Hollywood, she's got it down. And so we talk about those times together. She just lives that time, and you know, we talk about her daddy and his career. And so that's going to be coming up. But previously how we started, I started a couple of months ago. And so chapter by chapter, I read. Then my collaborator, Dr. Adam Garacci, and
tell us about Dr. Adam Garacci. How is he involved, and why is he involved?
Well, he's a PhD in psychology.
Uh-huh.
And he and I met, he was a fan who contacted me as he was writing one of his papers for his college that he was going to, and he contacted me in Honolulu, and you know, I've been very selective about who I reach out to. I love connecting with people, but you know, every so often someone stands out, and he did. He was 21 years old at the time. And our communication was really lovely, and we became friends. And finally, he made a trip to California when I moved here in 2011. And he came out from Adelaide, Australia, to visit, and, you know, we started writing. I thought my childhood and my life in my career, because I was up in my family, that I needed to make sense of my life, and he really helped me. So we, you know, after I do a reading, we kind of, you know, go through the explanations of what's going on from my perspective now.
Got it. That's why I was trying to understand why the doctor was involved. But that's great. That's great. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's very cathartic, and it's very healing. I'm all about, you know, holistic healing and wanting to put the pieces together that are missing in life, and especially now, you know, with the personal growth of what is going on this planet and the evolution of consciousness for us all to come together and go forward as one, you know, with God and Goddess, all that is, all, you know, the universe. And show humility and show reverence for Mother Nature and live our lives as we actually see our lives being lived, you know, not just surviving, you know, not just surviving, not just coping, you know, but actually enjoying our lives and loving life and remembering to take a good, healthy breath, you know?
Well, it sounds like we all need a Dr. Adam Garacci.
<That's> wonderful. He's a darling person.
I wanted to ask you one more time. I didn't write it down. What is the name of the show that's going to air tomorrow so I can let people know? What is the title of it, is there no title?
It's called, the podcast is called Love's a Secret Weapon.
Secret Weapon, yep.
Need love, love, love. And I read chapter by chapter. Each episode is another chapter. I start at the beginning, and now I'm at chapter five.
Chapter five. And what are we calling chapter five? What's the title?
These are the good times.
Nice. I want to let people know. These are
the
good times. Excellent. Now, I wanted to ask you real quick before we jump. Your book, Pop 60s, when did that come out? Is it out now?
Actually, it was out 2016, and it was, it went through the first printing, it went through the second printing, and now it's now it's on my website. It's not in bookstores anymore, but I think it's still on Amazon, actually. So it's a personal, my personal archive of photographs of my career. The man who was my manager was my adopted father and photographer. And so he traveled with me, most of the time. And so these are my personal archives with a storyline in between.
Nice. Well, Donna, where can folks get in touch with you if they need to, your website or anything where fans can reach out?
Thank you, Joanne. Yes, I have DonnaLauren.com, which is my website. And, I'm on Instagram, and I don't tweet much, but you can reach me on Twitter. And of course, my husband's reminding me, Facebook. He's an administrator of my Facebook page.
Facebook with you now.
yes. He informs me. And so it's two Facebook pages, actually. I have it's kind of the overflow page. And so there's the two pages on Facebook. So you can just find me by my name, Donna Lauren.
Nice. Well, I want to say hi, JC. I'm assuming that's JC in the background, right?
Yes,
your husband.
Yes, my dear husband. Thank you. Hi, Jared. He said hello.
Oh, thank you. Donna Lauren, I can't believe. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Folks, check out her new podcast, Love's a Secret Weapon. It's on every podcast outlet you can hear, Apple, Spotify, and where else are you going? You said there's others coming up?
Well, there's Google, and there's one called Anchor, which is free, so they have a wonderful format, so a platform to work from.
Nice. Well, guys, I'm sorry, honey. Yes, please, guys, check out Love is a Secret Weapon. It's Donna Lauren's new podcast, and she's also has Dr. Adam Garacci on with her, who they kind of touch on the episodes that she's reading. And it's chapter 5, These Are the Good Times. And, oh, my God, I hope I can catch it.
Well, once it's on, it's perpetuity.
Nice. I like to listen live. I'm one of those weirdos, but
me too.
There's
one. I have to make a recommendation. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Anything you want.
Okay. So first of all, it's Loves, L-O-V-E apostrophe S. So Loves a Secret Weapon, because there might be a Love is a Secret Weapon out there. I don't know, but anyway. Mine is Love the Secret Weapon. And there is a wonderful woman that I think you would enjoy, and many, many people may know her, but her name is Christiana Gutierrez. And her father was the 3-time president of Costa Rica. And she led up the Paris Agreement by coordinating 195 countries. She personally contacted through the UN as the delegate to put the Paris Agreement for climate change together. And so she and two other very strong environmental people are on this podcast called Outrage and Optimism. And everybody from Greta Thunberg to David Attenborough to even Stella McCartney, who is a vegan fashion designer. Anyone with consciousness, this is something to listen to learn from, and to be inspired by.
Wow. How do you spell her last name?
Oh, boy. That's Christiana Gutierrez. But if you please, I can't spell it. If you please just look for Outrage and Optimism, and you will discover someone that is so dedicated to helping our planet be saved.
And that is a podcast also, Donna?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to write that down, too. I share everything that we talked about tonight. So
perfect.
That's why I take notes. I'm taking notes, so I apologize.
You're a goodwill ambassador. Thank you.
Hey, you know what? Let's make people happy. I'm in the same boat as you. If we can make people happy, let's make them happy and spread some love and be kind, people. We're in a bad way right now, and let's show what we really are.
Exactly.
You know?
Show who you really are. And don't be afraid to speak up, because just like the Bible says, the meek shall inherit the earth, but the meek shall speak.
Ah, that's right. That's right. Well, Donna, I can't thank you enough for joining me tonight. It was such a treat and a pleasure to speak with you. And we could go on and on, but unfortunately, I do have another guest. And
how wonderful.
I can't wait to speak to him. Yeah, so I want to get Alexander on the phone, and we're going to have a great time. So I thank you so much. All the best to you. And
many
I will
you.
Reach out to you guys, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you so much. Take care, Donna, and I hope to tune into the show tomorrow.
Thank you, honey.
All right. Take care. Bye, everybody. Donna Lawrence.
Bye.
You got to check it out. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, darling.
Oh, boy. We had some, I couldn't even tell you we could go on and on and on. And with the questions I have, I just don't write them down, and I have to start doing that. So I can ask all the questions that I really want to. But in the meantime, I am going to get Mr. Alexander Morris on the line. I owe him an apology, and I will get him on the phone. You guys are going to love him. Alexander Morris is the new lead singer of the Four Tops. I can't wait. So while I get him, how about I want to play for you guys while we're waiting. A guest that's coming up, one of my favorites, Stacy Ladisaw, Love on a Two-Way Street, while I reach out to Alexander. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back. Everybody, I'm back, and I have with me, I cannot wait to speak to you, Mr. Alexander Morris. He's the new lead singer of the Tops, the Four Tops. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and yourself? How are you doing?
I'm good, and I thank you so much for waiting for me to speak out to you. Donna and I just could have went on for ever, you know, when girls get together, how that goes, you know. So, and she's had some career.
No,
yeah, she's had some career. I mean, my God, we could have talked forever. So, is this true that you're a pastor?
Yes, ma'am.
My goodness. Are you a little bit of Al Green going there for us?
Say that one more time.
You got a little Al Green in you, you know?
a little bit.
Nice.
A little bit.
Well, let me ask you.
From my father.
Nice. Let me ask you, how did you wind up hooking up with the Four Tops? What a thrill that must have been when you joined them.
It's something that I could have never imagined growing
Absolutely.
Up in Detroit. You know, nobody could ever told me that I would be a Four Top. I had someone ask me if it was a dream. And honestly, I told him it was not, because I never could have imagined that to be, because the Four Tops were already the Four Tops when I was born.
Right. Right.
So, you know, we desired maybe to amass the impact that they've had, or the success and things of that nature, but to actually become a part of them, that was something that was, at least in my mind, beyond me.
Absolutely.
But I became a part of the Tops. Terhan Earl Van Dyke Jr. Is the musical director of the Four Tops.
Uh-huh.
And he's also Duke Fakir's nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I and two other young men were two partners. We do a lot of writing and music together. Long story short, we were working, and I met Ronnie and Lawrence Jr. first.
Uh-huh.
They were in a studio session working on a song, and there was a part that they were looking for, and I was able to give them the part. So Ronnie McNair asked me to go into the vocal booth and lay the part down. When I finished, Lawrence asked me if I could sing another note, and I did.
Nice.
And so when I got ready to leave out of the booth, Lawrence had said to Ronnie, I want to hear how this guy's vocals sound, because he had heard me singing on records before.
Right, right, right.
And so they allowed me to sing on a portion of a song. And once I did that, Ronnie said to me, well, we're going to keep you on this song, and it'll be the Four Tops introducing you. And mm-hmm. for me, that was, you know, amazing, just to ever, just to sing on a song with the Four Tops. There's not too many people in history who've been able to do that.
Of
and
course.
To me, that was the greatest. Well, the next day, Terhan gave me a call and said that I had a studio session because Lawrence wanted me to come back in and sing on top of some of the Tops' live tracks, because they wanted to take
wow.
it to Duke.
Wow.
And at that moment, I kind of didn't grasp what he was saying to me.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean they want to take it to Duke? He said, just what I said. I said, wait a minute. Are you saying what I think you're saying? He said, just come in and sing the song.
Right. Just come and do it.
I did. Right. So I did that. And maybe about a month or so later, I got a phone call from Terhan that said, and he told me, he said, my uncle, Duke Fakir, wants to meet you at 1 o'clock at the studio on Thursday. So I came in, and I got a chance to meet with Duke. And we talked for about an hour and 35, 40 minutes. And he asked me to sing for him, which I did. And we talked a little more. And then he told me, he said, I have some things that I may have to do. I'm not sure if I'm going to make this type of a move or not. He said, but I tell you what, if the next time you hear from me, if I have a tape measure in my hand, you know what it is. And so he asked, and he said, I don't want to hear this anywhere. So I asked him for permission to talk to my spiritual advisors, because I wanted to make sure that all those things are lined up with the will of God for my life and for my family.
Right.
So maybe about 3 months later, the Tops were in Australia. I got a message to call Terhan the next day. And when I called him, he said, my uncle said for you to go to the tailor and to get fitted. And
you were in. Once you knew that, you were in.
And once I knew I was in, and that was like around the 20th, around the 21st of December of 2018. And
nice.
My first show at the Tops was 2019, January 4th.
Wow. Wow. So, Duke is still there, and I think Lawrence's son is performing too with the
yeah
group.
Yeah, right. Lawrence Payton Jr. is with us, Ronnie McNair, and then Duke Fakir, of course, is the last original and one of the founders of the Four Tops. He and
right.
Levi founded
yep.
the Tops together.
And yeah. and so it's ironic that you're on tonight, and the 17th is Levi's day of his passing. I didn't even realize that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me to be able to help carry the legacy.
Because you've got some pretty big, you've got some pretty big shoes to fill there, sir.
Well, you know, Joe, I never tried to steal Levi's shoes because there is no filling a Levi's stub shoe.
Right,
the greatest. He's the cornerstone.
Exactly.
What I asked God to do was to build me a pair of shoes that of my own that would honor him.
Very nice.
As the man that he was, not just on stage, but even the family man and the man of integrity that he was off stage. So I never approached this to try to emulate or imitate him or to fill his shoes because the shoes are too big to fill.
Absolutely.
But if God gave me a pair of shoes of my own that honored him, then I felt and I feel like that's the best honor to him that I could give him.
Absolutely. Now, other than singing in the church, have you done CDs yourself? Were you performing yourself before the band?
Well, I'm a writer and producer, really.
Oh, okay.
I never considered myself a singer. I sing.
You never considered yourself a singer, and you're in the Four Tops now. Wow.
No, I didn't. I promise you. I mean, I feel like I could hold my own. I sing by default because of my family. My cousin is the singer John Legend.
Really?
Yes. My cousin also is. Lillian Lloyd, she's one of the top gospel singers, and then also Aaron Lindsay, who is one of the top gospel producers in the industry. We're all related by blood.
Wow.
So I sing by default because my mother was a phenomenon. I'm a writer and vocal producer, but I always thought that my voice was weird. I always thought that I didn't sound like everybody else and that it was just, I just always felt my voice had a different sound to it. And I consider myself more of a stylist than a singer.
Well, that's what makes you good and makes you stand out. You don't sound like everybody else. You're your own.
And that's
what
Ronnie McNair told me.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said, if he ever heard me say that I wasn't a singer anymore, that he was going to punch me. So
you don't want to get hit.
But,
sure.
I don't know. Growing up in the city of Detroit, and then I lived in Los Angeles for over 20 years.
Wow.
There's a common sound we'll have, and sometimes that sound becomes so overwhelming that if you tend to feel that if I don't have that sound, then I'm not comparable with what's out here. Not recognizing that it's the difference in sound. And Ronnie McNair said it best to me. He said, that's what makes you great. He said, because you have what's called a signature sound.
Exactly.
He said, 100 people could sing, but when you open your mouth, anybody that knows your voice will know that that's you singing.
Right.
And he said,
and
that's what makes you different. And that's what makes you good. And I appreciate him for that because it gave me a confidence to be able to come out and to sing the best that I can. Like I said, Joe, I never tried to Levi.
Right.
Because I felt in my heart that what he would want from me is for me to sing the best Alexander that I could.
Exactly.
And that would honor him.
Right.
And that's all I know to do.
Right. And I don't know anybody who could sing like Levi, to be honest. You're your own voice, so, you know.
But right.
I got to ask you, what is your favorite top song that you do with the group? Which one do you like to perform the most when you're performing with
Bernadette?
Oh, I love that one too. I love that one too.
Bernadette, I think, and Ain't No Woman. I think those are my two favorites.
Ain't No Woman Like the One I Got.
Right. I think Bernadette was the hardest for me to learn. Bernadette and MacArthur Park were the two hardest.
Oh, really?
But Bernadette, the cadence and the phrasing that Levi sang on the normal timing pattern or time signature that people think it is, and when you're listening to it, it sounds like he's singing in one time pattern or time phrasing, but he's not. He's actually singing against the time. So
right,
trying
right.
to learn that phrasing and that timing and to fit the words the way he says the words,
right.
that was probably one of the hardest songs that I had to learn. And I knew once I got Bernadette and MacArthur Park, I knew that I would be okay.
Yeah.
So those are the two hardest for me.
Right, right. And do you do all the moves and everything?
I do everything.
Nice,
yes,
nice.
Ma'am.
I know they were so good. Oh my God, I'm sure still are. I just haven't seen them.
You have to come
ever,
to the show.
Definitely. Has the group ever thought about doing any new music instead of or that they do?
Yes, we're actually working on a new project right now.
Oh, great.
As we speak. And so hopefully next year there will be a new Tops album that will be coming out with brand new music and everything.
That's fabulous.
And there will be some throwback to some of the songs that they've released prior to. It's just, like I said, the main thing that Duke wants to ensure is that the integrity of the sound is the four Tops.
Right.
And so that's why we've been taking our time. But thankfully, a lot of the original writers and producers for the Tops are still present in the earth. And so been working with them, Holland, Dozier, and Holland, and different ones,
yeah.
To keep that, the integrity and the character of the Tops sound.
Right.
And so I think that the people and the fans of the Tops and the supporters of the Tops today, I believe that they'll be pleasantly pleased and satisfied.
Nice.
And also, we're reaching out to wider demographic audience-wise.
Yeah. So you should have said, we'll reach out. That's what you should have said. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll be there. I promise.
Yes. Are the songs sort of like got that pop feel or new sound?
Yeah.
Tops,
it's
new
no,
sound.
We're... It has, the only way I can say it is it has a newness and a freshness in texture, but the sound is classically the top.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to hear it. You got to come back with a
the
drink.
The sound is classically the top.
You got to come back with a drink.
The Tops has such a, they have such a sound and such a blend, and that has been, that's been the foundation of the project is
right.
that those things that are the Tops remain because that's what people are going to want. And to see, of course, the kinds of change, music has changed, but timeless music and great music doesn't change.
Right. Is Smokey working on any of the songs or no?
He's involved with us and
nice.
So forth. So we're just, like I said, you know,
You're keeping it in the vein. That's nice.
Keeping it in the vein of what the Tops have always been, but there is a slight newness to certain things.
Yeah.
Certain things are going to change because of the voices.
Right.
And the texture of the voices are a little different. But for Duke Fakir, it's still what has the most. One of the most beautiful, pristine first tenor voices. At 84 years old, Duke's
wow.
voice is as pristine now as it was when he was a young man. Lawrence sounds so identical to his father, it's almost eerie.
Wow.
And then you have Ronnie McNair, who has one of the most smooth tones and approaches to his voice. And I don't sound like Levi, but I'm reminiscent of Levi because we both have very big voices and big range.
Right.
So those things together keep the integrity and the sound of the Tops, but the little nuances in our voices give it just a slight enough edge that it's not a repeat of what they've done, but it is comparable to what they've done. With them, just a little twist.
It's Tops.
That's the way I can explain it.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's the four Tops today, which is going to be fabulous.
Yeah.
Yep. And I got to ask you now, when you were playing, not
not that you're not, it's just that nobody could go out and play right now. But when you were out doing shows with the group, what other groups did, is it usually just a Four Tops show, or do you have other groups performing with you?
Well, normally we do about 65 shows a year with the Temptations.
Nice.
We do the TNT tour.
Nice.
And so that is one of the bigger elements of our performance year.
What a night that must be. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's amazing. One night we'll open and the Temptations close, and then the next night we flip-flop, and then they'll open and we'll close. And it's such a great rivalry, but we're off stage. We're all very close, and the Temptations are great. You know, I've learned so much from not just the Tops, but also from Mr. Otis and from Ron and Terry and Willie and those guys.
Yeah.
Larry Braggs and them. You know, they are really family. And there's been times where I've just gone and stood on the side of the stage and just watched the Temptations and do what they do and sing those songs. And for a guy my age to be able to stand and watch a legend do what they've done for 40 plus years is amazing to me.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What other groups do you guys play with when you tour?
We've done with the Temptations. Well, we do with the Temptations the majority, but then we've been with the Spinners.
Yeah.
We've been with the Beach Boys, Tavares, and several others. But primarily, we tour together, the TNT tour, Tops and Temps, Temps and Tops.
Yeah,
that's the primary group that we're with.
You must have to pinch yourself performing with these other bands too when you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, to see the Beach Boys, you know, or back in last year before the pandemic hit, I believe it was December 1st, we were in Los Angeles. We did the formerly the Nokia, but now the Microsoft Theater with Jeffrey Osborne and the OJs.
Nice. Oh wow!
And you know, for me, I'm trying not to be awestruck, but you know, I'm looking. I'm like, do you know that you're Eddie LeVert?
Right.
You know, do you know that you're Jeffrey Osborne?
Right.
And to stand shoulder to shoulder with these men that I've grown up listening to and have admired, and to share a stage with them is more than I could have ever imagined.
I couldn't imagine.
You know,
many
days I'll ask my wife. I'll just look at her and say, "Can you believe this is our life?"
Right.
You know, it's such a dynamic, and you know, I've been blessed throughout my career writing, but this is just such a different dimension and dynamic. You know, sometimes it's almost overwhelming.
Yeah.
But I know my assignment, and that is to touch people's lives,
right.
You know, from a spirit of love and togetherness. You know, there's so much that is going on around us that it feels good to be a part of that group,
right,
that wants to unite and love on people,
right,
and bring us back to the remembrance of what it is to not have division, but to have togetherness, you know. So for me, those are one of the greatest elements of being one of the Four Tops.
Right, and I got to ask you, how long is a TNT show?
All together, probably about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Oh my
because
God, I can't imagine.
We do an hour,
3 hours of music, just having a great old time for 3 hours.
We do about an hour and 10 minutes. And then they have an intermission, and then the Temptations to come out, or vice versa, and they do about the same amount. So you're looking at, as far as singing, about 2 hours and 20 minutes of singing, but with the intermission and stuff like that, the show probably goes maybe about 2 hours and 45 minutes to 3 hours. But you would never know it. I mean, because
no, you're looking at a great time. You're gonna have a great time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's what I'm saying. I can't imagine. That's why I asked you how long it was, because like I miss going to concerts so bad. I love them, and that would be a fantastic concert to catch and to listen to that music for 3 hours and just be happy for 3 hours would be so nice. You know,
I think you would love it, and you've got to come see a show. And we're getting ready to get back on the road at the end of mid November. We start back touring. And in November and December, and then from what we understand, top of the year, we're kicking back off full again. You know, it's just with COVID,
right.
They want to make sure that, you know, certain safety precautions and elements are in place for the supporters that come as well as for us.
Of course.
And our main thing is we want people to be safe.
Right.
And
right.
We didn't jump right out. Because we wanted to make sure that things were that certain things were in place, because we want to make sure that the people that support us that come, that they'll be able to come and enjoy themselves without having to worry about being exposed to anything that could damage or adversely affect their lives. You know,
right. Absolutely.
But
and
we
yourself.
Are so anxious.
And yourself,
we're right. And we're so anxious. We're ready to get back. You know, being with the people, we miss it so much.
Right.
You know, so we've done a few things as far as private events, and we've done a few things virtual, but it's nothing like being able to touch, love you, and that you love. It's nothing
right.
like it. There's no feeling in the world like that when you're able to see people up and dancing and laughing and smiling and enjoying themselves, or you sing certain songs, and you can see the look in someone's eyes or face, that song takes them back to a specific time,
yep.
a specific element or moment in their lives, and to see them just embrace that moment. There's nothing in the world like it.
Yep.
I promise. So
yep.
we're ready to get back to work. You know, I think we've all, we feel like we're growing roots.
Yeah.
We're ready to get
Crazy.
Back to work.
I know. Where on the East Coast are you guys going to be? Do you know off the top of your head or not really?
I know we're scheduled in Atlantic City.
Mm.
We have some things in New Jersey, as well as New York, Pennsylvania. We're scheduled in Virginia, Myrtle Beach area. And then we have quite a few dates down in Florida and so forth. We're probably looking upwards of 120 to 130 shows this year.
Oh, my goodness.
So
we'll
be going pretty hard.
Any idea in Jersey you might be other than an AC?
If I'm not mistaken, we're supposed to be in New Jersey in December, November, December.
Oh, cool.
I think New Brunswick or something of that nature.
Okay. That might be St. George's Theater.
Yeah, I think if the calendar remains intact, I believe we're in New Jersey in November, December.
Well,
and
I got to do my best to get there because I got to see it.
You got to come. You got to come. You got
to
come.
I'd
love and I'll
to.
Make
you
sure you're
me?
Good.
Oh, thank you.
Good.
Oh, why don't you make my day and I could pinch myself and I'll get to meet the top. How's that?
That sounds like a plan to us.
And, you know, it's funny. When I was singing, I said, you know when I know when I made it? When I got my own three black chicks singing with me. And if you let me
that,
sing
that,
with...
That was a sign
yeah,
that you made
yeah, so
it.
Have you ever said, I know when I make it when I got a white chick singing with me?
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding.
No, it's one of those things where it's like when you... It's funny, but it's true. When it's like, I guess black artists are like, if I have other races that are
right,
on,
right.
I guess it's vice versa.
Or when you,
you
become,
know,
or when you become elevator music.
When you become elevator music, right?
Then
you
know.
Then you know you made it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was funny. My wife was watching television the other day, and all of a sudden, she starts singing along with a song that's playing in the background of a movie. And she was like, wait a minute, That's Bernadette. You know, and it's I have two children. I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old daughter.
Mm.
And so when I first became a Four Top, my girls, they knew the songs, but they hadn't correlated the songs with the group.
Right.
They didn't know that Four Tops.
Well, I'd like to think everybody knows. I'd like to think everybody knows who the Four Tops are. I hope so.
Right. Well, they weren't able to put the name with it.
Yeah.
But they didn't recognize that that's who that was. So